Today on Movie Wallahs, we talk about Professor Marston and the Wonder Women and The Foreigner. Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
So, Rashmi finally watched Wonder Woman.
I finally watched Wonder Woman, which is timely because we're going to be talking about
Professor Marston and the Wonder Women.
Yeah.
What did you think? Because for a long time, you thought that the guys were going to like this because we were drooling over Gal Gadot.
Correct.
And there may have been a little drooling over Gal Gadot, or Gal Gadot, as I should say.
Correct.
Is it Gadot?
Yes, it's Gadot.
She's Israeli, so you pronounce the T for some reason.
Okay.
At least that's what she says, yes. And I think she would know.
One would hope.
One would hope. What did you think of it?
I liked it.
On the spot, on the podcast.
I liked it more than I thought I would. I don't think it was the second coming.
No, I don't think anyone else.
I do agree with the things that you guys, along with Gary, who stood in for me that day. Thank you, Gary. Said about it being about her innocence and her naivety and her.
It's a solid superhero movie.
Yeah.
An earnest.
Yeah.
Superhero movie.
And I think it plays its gender politics well. Like, she's strong, but she's, you know,
feminine. And yeah. I like her. I like that it was more about her desire to do good than her being a female or a male, to be honest.
Right.
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 I think that's what I took away from it. Yeah. So I wasn't disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the moment I liked it as much as I did because it was a DC superhero movie, which, you know, the last thing that we saw from that franchise was the disaster that was Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
And, you know, even me as, like, the most ardent of the three of us, I'm not a huge super comic book fan, but I really want to like those films. That was such a disaster that I thought, Wonder Woman rolled eyes.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think it had such an impact on me at the moment, in the moment, because it was a really, it was competent as opposed to being completely incompetent.
Mm-hmm. And I'm very glad that you insisted I watch it before we went to see Professor Marston and the Wonder Women.
Yeah, well, I figured that would be a good excuse.
Yeah.
Kind of relevant. So before we jump into our reviews, I guess we should do our periodic segment that we do called I can't find anything to watch on Netflix, which we do because oftentimes, and I actually just encountered this myself, the user interface on Netflix can be kind of befuddling. There's a lot of things presented to you, and I think, you know, digging through, I actually have spent whole evenings actually digging through the content to, because there's something like 15,000 movies.
Yeah.
Or something. It's a ridiculous amount of movies. It's just how to organize and present that to you is something they've been futzing with a lot, and I don't think it's there yet.
I was gonna say,
I think it's gotten worse.
If someone from Netflix is listening, unfortunately what they're doing is plastering that first page all with new Netflix TV as opposed to movies that you can watch. And that's great if you want to be watching, you know, binge watching TV series. But if you're looking for movies, it is actually very difficult to find. One thing I did today actually was if you go in and search by genre, then you can arrange things by date and by star rating.
By release date.
And then it pulls different windows. So you can do films and then you can do genre. And then it will show you all the films in that genre, which was kind of an interesting way to view it. And then you're not sort of polluted by all of the TV and what's new and it's all mixed up.
But even strategically, it seems like they've made a decision that they're going to concentrate on just creating new content, mostly television-driven.
They feel like they're kind of like an HBO wannabe at the moment.
I think they've got a little bit of an identity crisis right now because Netflix came to power by essentially defeating Blockbuster at the movies game, right? And then they shifted the DVD model to online streaming, which we, you know, struggled with, I think, initially, because there was a dearth of content online, but studios have come around to that. But then I think their biggest Achilles heel was that they're dependent on other people for content, so they used all of this money that they were generating to create some of their own content so that they weren't completely beholden to other parties. And I understand the strategic move, but it's become a little confusing, like you say, Rashmi, because there's a lot of episodic TV content, much of it excellent quality. I mean, the some of the shows we see on Netflix are as good as anything that you see elsewhere, like an HBO.
Yeah.
But it's become a confusing... When you sit down and you fire up Netflix, it's
overwhelming.
Well, we have to know. I mean, just in our household, because there's two of us, I often get irritated if we don't have a choice already, because I hate the process of sitting down and deciding.
I'm horrible. I'll spend like an hour like adding stuff to my queue.
Let's watch something, and then it's like an hour later, pick something,
right?
And we'll go through like choice, and I can't stomach it.
I do the same thing. I'll spend an hour just putting things in one after the other.
You and Joe should not watch Netflix together ever, because you'd never get to watch a movie.
But it's a great hour. I love that hour.
I actually have fun.
I enjoy that hour.
So you enjoy the journey more than the destination.
Discovering the little gems. It's like, oh my God, that's
on
Netflix.
But then you never get around to watching them. It's like, let's watch one now.
Rashmi, it's a Netflix queue, not a to-do list. We've spoken about
this. So you keep telling me, Joe. And on that note, See, we're on the journey again.
I just don't understand Netflix's financial model, because clearly they're able to finance movies with big name actors. I mean, Brad Pitt movies are on Netflix and nowhere else. Jake Gyllenhaal movies are on Netflix and nowhere else. And, you know, what was I saying? Noah Baumbach's new movie with Dustin Hoffman and Brad Pitt. Mm. Not Brad Pitt, sorry, but Ben Stiller is on Netflix. So I don't understand that they have enough money. Like, this must be millions to finance these movies and show them exclusively on Netflix. So I don't know. They'll figure it out one day.
And what they're hoping is that that drives subscription revenue, right? If this is the only place that you can get access to that, mm-hmm. as a movie fan, you have to be part of the club. And that's
kind of like HBO.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, the appeal to content creators, I was listening to another podcast where they were talking about this, but the appeal to content creators appears to be not so much the audience size that they can pull in via Netflix, because it is more limited. It's actually the creative control.
Right.
Because too much of what they do through the studio system ends up having to go through, you know, 1,000 committees, and, you know, they lose a lot of that directorial choice that they get. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, with that, and that very famously was with House of Cards, when Kevin Spacey chose to go, well, Kevin Spacey and the whole House of Cards team, essentially Fincher, everyone, chose to go with Netflix, not just because of the size of the check, but because they got to make the whole series instead of a pilot. They got complete 100% creative control about the content. And that was, for them, the reason that they do this stuff. So, interesting. Anyway, to help you out there, if you're not already bored of the podcast and have tuned out, find and navigate Netflix. We do our regular segment. So what's in your Netflix queues this week?
So mine is a movie, and I swear to God, I thought I had seen this at a previous Tribeca Film Festival with one of you, but clearly I watched this on my own at some point in time.
With your other husband.
Yes, there you go. So this is a movie from 2016. It's called Blue Jay. And Yazdi, I'm going to insist, I just said this before the podcast, I insist that Yazdi watch this. This is a movie that is just so up Yazdi's street. It's actually written by Mark Duplass, and it stars basically Mark Duplass and that wonderful actress Sarah Paulson, mm-hmm. Who is just starting to get, I think, recognized for the great actress that she is. It's shot in black and white, and it's basically about a chance meeting of two childhood sweethearts when they return home to their tiny California hometown, and they basically meet in a grocery store. That's all I want to say, and it's kind of what happens from that point forward. And this is one of those...
Sci-fi?
No. Achingly beautiful accounts of relationships.
Hmm.
And there's more than meets the eye. So I'll leave it at that.
And was that this year?
It's not like that Elizabeth Moss, Jay Duplass movie, which we also saw.
The one I love.
No. There's nothing sci-fi about this. Okay. This is just a very raw... open, honest.
Now, was that this year's Tribeca?
No, last year's, 2016. Okay. Yeah, just stunning movie. And it's beautifully shot, and it's literally in three locations.
Hmm.
And it's just the two of them. Predominantly, it's about the two of them. That's it. Very, very focused. It's beautiful. I really want Yazdi to watch this and then let me know what you think.
Okay.
Blue Jay.
And fully agree with you about Sarah Paulson.
Yeah.
I mean,
she's
everywhere. She's on all of Ryan Murphy's shows. She was in the O.J. Simpson one. She was in Carol. I think, didn't she get a best support? She was in contention to get a best supporting.
Yeah, but she didn't quite make it. The good thing about this one.
Interesting actresses that, you know, everyone knows her and admires her, and I feel like she never gets a lead role. I mean, you know, this sounds like one of the few lead roles that she has, but she always is a solid supporting actress.
Mm. Solid.
And, you know, I love her to bits as well. Yeah. I think she's
very perceptive as an actor.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's something dislikable about her face. I wonder if that's what it is.
I was hoping that Happy Rashmi had returned to this podcast after the last few weeks we've had, but clearly... We're not there yet.
No, I'm telling you about a film I love.
Okay. And you're telling us about somebody's face that you dislike.
No, I'm just saying that I think that's why she doesn't do well, because she almost has. So there's this new term around which is called resting bitch face.
Rashmi Weinstein.
Oh, Rashmi, don't go there.
No, I think she has resting bitch face. Yeah. I have resting bitch face.
Welcome to Rashmi Weinstein.
She's in good company.
That's horrible. Really? I didn't know that phrase.
You do know that this goes out on the internet.
I didn't know that term. That's horrible.
Yeah, there's a term. It's called resting bitch face. It basically means that when someone's not really thinking about anything in resting state, they look like a bitch.
That's horrible. That's so wrong.
Anyway, Blue Jay is my contribution to I Can't Find Anything to Watch on Netflix. Yazdi, over to you.
Let's change topics. Wipe.
My movie recommendation at Netflix is also a movie about two people who cross paths several years after meeting initially in college. Only mine is called Sleeping with Other People. And
great movie, great choice.
This was one we saw at the Tribeca Film Festival last year or the year before.
Yeah,
and it's just so much fun. It's beautifully acted. It stars Jason Sudeikis in the lead role and Alison Brie, again another actor who doesn't get a lot of coverage, but also supported by Adam Scott and Natasha Lyonne, who are both so good. But it essentially is about two people who had a very interesting kind of run in when they were, you know, teenagers in college, and they meet again several years later, like 15 years later, and they're different places in their life. And it's funny and it's smart, it's witty. It's got one of the dirtiest, most vulgar scenes, but it's all orally conveyed. And Alison Brie is great at it.
She's a great actress.
I love her. Yeah.
Yeah. You'll enjoy your hour and a half watching Sleeping with Other People.
Yeah.
Terrific stuff.
Yeah.
There seems to be a common theme here about, you know, people meeting and reunions, because I'm picking Before Midnight.
Oh yeah.
The third in the Before series by Richard Linklater. So I think it was Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and then Before Midnight. And interestingly, this was the first of the movies that I actually saw. Mm-hmm. Of the three, we saw it at the South by Southwest Film Festival, I think in 2013. Mm. And I was blown away at this whole series. I mean, we came back and kind of toot sweet watched the first two movies in the series as quickly as we could, because we simply hadn't come across them. Directed by Richard Linklater, starring Julie Delphi and Ethan Hawke.
Yeah.
These are remarkably technically accomplished pieces of acting work more than anything
difficult.
Else. I mean, Linklater's a remarkable director. I think we're all fans of him here on the podcast.
Absolutely.
And what I like about these movies is that they have this typical setup where they have these 10, 15, 20 minute long takes at times, mm-hmm. where the two actors are literally, it feels like they're, you know, you're watching a conversation, but they're not improvised. They're not, these are learned lines that these characters, that these actors have to do. And Before Midnight is the third in the series, so if you haven't seen the first two, I recommend trying to see them in order. But honestly, as a piece of work, it stood on its own fabulously. So Before Midnight, Richard Linklater, Julie Delphi, Ethan Hawke, watch it now.
As a series, those Before series, I think they stand at the very top of, you know, of like magic in cinema. I think what they've accomplished over those three movies is nothing short of miraculous, I think. We all have exceptionally high regard for those movies. There's something altogether. It's lightning in a bottle.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so to recap, we have Rashmi.
Blue Jay.
Yesti.
Sleeping with Other People.
And my pick is Before Midnight. So plenty to watch on Netflix. If you can't find your way through their interface, then listen to Movie Wallers, because we do try and give you a pick as often as we can. All right, let's move into our reviews then. We have two movies to do, Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman and The Foreigner. Where would you like to start?
Let's start with The Foreigner.
Okay. So New Zealand-born director Martin Campbell has quite a filmography. He made most famously GoldenEye as well as Casino Royale. He was the director of both of those movies. So he's made some great, well-regarded movies. He's also made a few turkeys, such as Green Lantern and No Escape. And he returns here for the movie The Foreigner, which is, I guess, primarily being sold as an action movie with Jackie Chan, which has no humor to it. Usually Jackie Chan's movies have a lot of humor to it, and that's what he's beloved around the world for. And the IMDb, I haven't seen this movie, although I wanted to. The IMDb summary for it says that a humble businessman with a buried past seeks justice when his daughter is killed in an act of terrorism. A cat and mouse conflict ensues with a government official whose past may hold clues to the killer's identity. And obviously, I presume the humble businessman is played by Jackie Chan, and then the government official is played by Pierce Brosnan. The movie is written by David Marconi and based on the novel The Chinaman by Stephen Leather. It also includes Katie Leung and Rufus Jones as the top billed cast for the movie. So is this a gem or is this a turkey? You guys.
So this isn't going to win any awards at the end of the year. But I really enjoyed this movie. Mm. I love that this was serious Jackie Chan, but in my mind, he's really the MacGuffin for something else that's going on. Mm. And I love the what else is going on. And I love the fact that this questions what happens to terrorist organizations once they're legitimized and the push and pull of what gives people purpose. I really like this movie.
Yeah, I kind of like the hypothetical geopolitics aspect of it as well. I mean, it very much is hypothetical, and I think
hypothetical in that we don't know these countries?
Or? In that it really talks about a conflict that has been buried, but, you know, I'll say it. I mean, it really reaches back to the Northern Ireland,
IRA
conflict that we had growing up in the UK. You know, certainly in the 70s and 80s, it was a huge deal. And, you know, the since then kind of... Sinn Féin, legitimization of Sinn Féin as a political body.
Yeah.
So it then takes that and runs with it, and it has that kind of stuff going on in the background. But I actually, you know, as much as I enjoyed that aspect of it, I think that was the MacGuffin more than anything else.
Oh,
this
really?
This was just an excuse to do Taken again. Yes. And
sounds very Taken-ish.
Yeah.
It looked like Taken in the trailer. It felt like Taken in the moment. This is, you know, another story where, you know, a good man is wronged, you know, but he has a very particular set of skills that enable him to seek justice in his own kind of vigilante way. And as much as I was excited to see Jackie Chan in a more serious role here, I think as an actor he does fine. But he does feel a little awkward here. I think, you know, the beauty of many of the Jackie Chan films for me is the inventiveness of the combat. You know, he might find himself cornered and then, you know, grab a toilet brush out of nowhere and use it as a weapon that becomes very effective. And there's hilarity in that.
Hmm.
Is there any of that?
There is some of that ingenuity here in the fight scenes, but because the movie has a more serious tone, we don't have as much fun with the fight scenes that well. They're very well executed. And, you know, overall, I have to say I enjoyed this movie, but you know, Jackie Chan is one of those actors that, you know, I think for the longest time, Rashmi, I've told you, you know, Jackie Chan is like my ultimate hero.
Yeah.
I've read his biography. I love all of his early work. And, you know, as a fan of his films, this was going to be fun for me unless it was truly dreadful, which it was not.
Yeah.
So, I like this a lot. There are some problems with it, and we'll talk about those.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the issue, Yasti. I think people, and you said it, Joe, I think people will be disappointed if they're going to see this movie for Jackie Chan. But I think if you adjust your expectations and realize that he's not necessarily the main act here, I think it's an enjoyable movie. And I think, this is the Taken the IRA version. I like that it kept me guessing, and I kept writing my notes, such and such is bad, such and such is bad, such and such. It kept me guessing, like I didn't know who the bad guy was. I really like Pierce Brosnan. I do not like Pierce Brosnan generally because I find him pretty smarmy and cocky. I think he was really good in this role. I love that it was kind of more of a vanity-free type performance. And I like that he's graying and older. And
I like what he's been doing in the last several years.
I liked his Northern Irish accent. And I'm happy that for once this wasn't a Middle Eastern terrorist or a North Korean.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, I think, you know, the movie's major flaw for me was, and I was over this, but it kind of happens in the first 20 minutes, and then I kind of had to get over it. Because at the beginning of the movie, Jackie Chan is this, you know, shuffling 65-year-old man. You know, he's like, he can barely walk, right? He looks like he should, you know, he needs a walking stick or some kind of frame. And then, you know, within minutes, he's doing, you know, the usual backflips and Jackie Chan antics that, you know, Jackie Chan is known for. And, you know, I was at least hoping to have some sort of training montage in the middle where, you know, he's wronged and he's upset. And so, you know, he starts doing one-arm push-ups and carrying wood up hills and things like that. Just kind of
on his back.
Getting himself into shape to take on the mammoth task that he set himself. But I think he made this awful jump of, like, you know, shuffling old man to like, you know, baddest of the baddest that can take out anybody.
See, I could buy it because of his secret past that no one knows about. So for me, it was plausible. Like, he's kind of put that aside and forgotten about that, and he's just a father, and now suddenly he's got to rely on those old skills to get where he wants to be. I think the title's a bit strange. I don't think the title is befitting of this movie, The Foreigner. It doesn't really tell me anything about the movie.
That's actually a really good point.
So I think this would have done better if it was a different...
Would it have been better if it was gone by its original name, the Chinaman?
No, I don't think that would be a very good title either. I just don't think it's a very good title. But I can sum this one up, Joe. For me, this was equally entertaining and thrilling. 7 out of 10. Solid.
Yeah. You know, I guess we're wrapping this one up pretty quickly. But yeah, you know, it has... I just put the trailer on here while we were talking, but... one of the things that it reminded me most of was, you know, the scenes in the original First Blood, mm-hmm. where he's in the forest and he's trying to, you know, take out these bad guys one by one. And, you know, Rambo kind of pops out from behind a tree all, you know, dressed in black and, you know, dispatches of somebody. And the other guys are like, whoa, whoa, can somebody move? Where are you? Hey, yeah. There was lots and lots of that. And that was kind of fun. I think the movie's morals are a little bit questionable as well. I mean, he uses... a lot of terrorist tactics himself in the revenge mode. And so, you know, again, you kind of, it's a little sad to see, you know, my friend Jackie Chan, you know, setting like car bombs. You know, that to me is not befitting of the kind of person that I would cast here, you know. So, you know, it is trying to bring out a different side of Jackie Chan. I don't know that I bought the serious actor side of things yet, but overall, yeah, an enjoyable romp. I think it's a good bit of you know, action movie stuff. It's very, very much like the Taken film. So if you enjoy those type of movies on a Friday night, then this is a good slice of that for you. And I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10 as well.
How's the pacing? Is it
perfect?
Pretty fast?
It's very
fine.
Good.
Yeah. No, it starts literally with a bang, and then
it begins.
Yeah, and then it's up there, and it's
like act one
is relatively
like
tense,
7 minutes long.
Yeah, but it's relatively tense all the way through, and I think, like you said, Rashmi, I mean the suspense is good throughout because there are a number of places that you can start allocating blame in the situation, and as the movie goes along, it kind of checks those off the list for you, and you know you kind of have that kind of, okay, then if it's not, then it must be. wait. And then, you know, so you have those moments as you go through. You know, I wouldn't say it's intricately plotted, but if you're going for the obvious kind of action movie tropes, it's saying, you know, ha, you know, there's nothing behind that door. You know, ha, this one's, you know, blank too. So it must be this last one. And then you're like, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a good back of the plane movie.
Yeah, it is. It's a perfect totally back fun. Of the plane movie. And it's a perfect, you know, Netflix movie. And it's just fun. I kind of enjoyed it. I really enjoyed
it. For a movie that's got a serious tone to it, it's actually fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's in London. Yay.
Yeah, that's right.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
It was all set in the UK.
Like, I was like, oh, look, there's...
Well, and there's Belfast, I think. They go.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
All right. Moving on then to our second movie of the week, which is Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman. So, Rashmi, are you going to tell us about
this.
That?
I am doing this. So, this is the story of psychologist William Moulton Marston, the polyamorous relationship between his wife and his mistress, and the creation of the beloved comic book character Wonder Woman, which we spoke about at the beginning of this podcast, and the controversy the comic generated. So this is directed and written by Angela Robinson. And if you're thinking, oh, I recognize that name, Angela Robinson, she's actually known for a lot of TV stuff. Mm. So she has done a ton of...
like HBO, True Blood.
Yeah, True Blood, The L Word. I was shocked when I just looked up her resume.
She also did Herbie Fully Loaded.
Yeah, she's done a lot.
Yeah, Charlie's Angels.
Yeah. So she writes and directs this one. And this stars Luke Evans, Connie Britton, Rebecca Hall, and Bella Heathcote. So Yazdi, what did you think of this? Because I remember telling you, oh, we're going to go and watch this. And you were like, oh, what's that? And I said, it's about the guy who invented Wonder Woman.
Yes. Gosh, where do I start? I think sometimes truth is, you know, it's such a cliche, but truth is stranger than fiction. And this is an incredible story, if there is any truth to it. And I suspect it is, because this is based on verifiable facts. But I just found the whole story of, you know, Professor Marston just really fascinating. It was especially considering the time during which this his whole life played out and what he was able to get away with. I think speaks a lot about us than it speaks about him, in terms of how we react to it now and how the people around them react to it. And I think I don't know if it's sort of a tired technique, but there's this whole issue in the movie, there's this whole theme in the movie where he's being questioned about, you know, from the family, from a group of people who are, you know, looking
like
out,
like a watchdog.
Yeah. He's being questioned because, you know, he has questionable content in
the, and he's like America's Association for Child Protection or something like that. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so he kind of defends, so he's being accused that the Wonder Woman comics are inappropriate for children, that the content is pretty risque, that he kind of gets into bondage and overly sexual things and so forth, and he kind of explains things. But I think, as tired as that premise, as the device is, it really works here, because if you've seen the Wonder Woman movie, or if you're familiar with Wonder Woman, a lot of the things you realize, oh, this is where this bit comes from in Wonder Woman. So I think it helps you connect nicely with what we know about Wonder Woman. And as little or as much as I knew about Wonder Woman, I found out so much more, even about the Wonder Woman comics themselves. I did not know that the origin of the Wonder Woman comics was actually pretty... what's the word I'm looking for? Risque. You know, when it first came out.
So you enjoyed it or not?
I did. I liked this movie tremendously. It has a few misfires here and there, but I really enjoyed it. What a story. It's incredible.
Joe?
You know, I kept trying to relate it to the Wonder Woman movie that we just saw this year. And so I think, you know, I think it has more to do with the comics, because I think I'm not a comic book fan. I don't read comic books to the extent, so I don't know many of the allusions that it was making about the content of those comics being kind of racy. I can't speak to that. I know that the movie we saw this year didn't have a lot of that in it. So, you know, I didn't connect those dots in particular. You know, as a movie, this was okay. It was a very interesting backstory, you know, to the genesis of the Wonder Woman character. And as, you know, in, when viewed in that light, I think it was an okay film telling that particular story. The other stuff in there in terms of, you know, the sexual politics of the time and, you know, their particular choice of lifestyle, I think was, you know, I can understand why at the time that particular lifestyle was seen and viewed upon with such, you know, disdain by the rest of the world. But in a modern light, this movie didn't really, you know, create any ripples. You know, I saw it as, you know, this is how these people chose to live. And so it didn't have any real punches for me in that regard. I think it was a complex kind of three-way love story in some ways. But unremarkable, you know, this was an okay film for me. I mean, it's reviewed incredibly well. I think it's still running 87% on Tomatometer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm a little shy of that myself. But, yeah, it was a very interesting backstory.
I'm with Joe this week. So poor Rebecca Hall, who got stuck again with a man who also wants to be with another woman. During Tribeca Film Festival, yesterday, you and I saw a movie called Permission.
Which was so good.
Which was so good. But it felt like a teeny tiny modern day twist on this movie too, I think, but not quite Vicky Cristina Barcelona. And now this, the major problem I had with the movie was, okay, you're gonna shout at me now, don't. I felt it was totally misogynistic in that Professor Marsden perceived that it took two women to make the perfect woman without acknowledging that he's not perfect himself. And I hate, this is the thing that really, really ground on me the most. I hate that the women had to be strong versus feminine, because I think women are generally all of those things. And so to break it down as you have to either be one camp or the other was just such a disappointment.
They can't all be like you, Rashmi.
Sorry?
They can't all be like you, Rashmi.
I know. Right thing to say, Joe. I agree with you, Joe. I think this had the potential to score some major political heft, and it just felt flat and awkward for me.
Really?
Yeah. I agree that it's an interesting story, but it just turned into Hallmark movie of the week for me. As opposed to being, you know, about the impact of this comic character on people's lives and how it changed the fabric of America and how it kind of got into people's psyche, whether you liked it or hated it.
I, you know, not to give too much away, but I was just fascinated by the idea that this was a very well-regarded, you know, Harvard professor, you mm-hmm. know, who was celebrated. His wife was unable to get a PhD because of the sexual politics at that time, mm-hmm. and women were not allowed. I guess, you know, it was much more difficult for women to be granted the degree. And then because of the scandal where he kind of, you know, they started living, you know, he started living with his wife and this other woman together, they kind of were shunned, and he was kind of, they were both kicked out of their professions, and he kind of was left without an option to do much. And then almost through chance, after trying different things, he kind of happened upon this creation of comic book creation. And I don't think that he necessarily, those were the two women in his life, you know, at, you know, through most of his life. And he kind of saw his creation of, you know, Wonder Woman as a composite of the two. And I don't think he meant that you need two women to make one. So I was just, even if this hadn't been about Wonder Woman, it was just so remarkable. It's very well written, I think. The dialogue is excellent. And yes. And it just speaks to how, I cannot even, their lifestyle was really unconventional for the time. And, you know.
But was it Yazdi, or was it just that there aren't documented incidences of this? Because polygamy, polyamory, these things have been around for centuries. And so.
But they weren't accepted in society.
Not in mainstream society.
True. Right? But what I'm saying is, we're looking at this through a lens like, look how remarkable they were for living this life.
I don't know. That I think doing this that went on.
No, I think they're saying they made this choice and they paid a price for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they paid a price, though.
No?
You don't?
No, not really.
I think they lost their careers. I think they were very They were pretty much ostracized from any you know, society in terms of neighborhood that in which they lived. I mean, they had to be very covert about this stuff.
Yeah, as do people now, I imagine.
I don't know. In the same situation. True. I mean, you know, I guess, you know, would I raise an eyebrow if somebody had those living arrangements on my street? You know, perhaps. But it wouldn't surprise me if somebody I knew lived that way. I mean, and it wouldn't be upsetting to me anyway. And
yeah,
I think at the time that was extraordinary. I mean, it was, you know, akin to devil worship, right? I mean, they simply weren't accepted as
and I also liked the
kind of any kind of a marriage.
And I liked how well fleshed out all the characters were. I really thought that particularly Rebecca Hall's character, and you know, she's such a gift to cinema. I can't wait for her to get on a project which just blows her, you know, to, you know, where she just she deserves to be 10 times more famous than she is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But particularly her character was a very strong, confident, intelligent, very self-assured person, and I found it fascinating that somebody like that would kind of get into a relationship with another woman and her husband. And it's not trivial, because it can come off looking like some kind of bad, you know, Dear Playboy letter, you know.
And that's what I think it did to me. I think,
yeah,
as Joe drops his computer.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I think that's what it came off to me as. It came off to me as once they get together, I didn't get a sense that the marriage between Professor Marsden and his wife was solid enough to. It became all about this third person that they both love, as opposed to their love of each other, in a sense. It was very strange. It felt like a very strange dynamic to me. It didn't feel fair. But that's probably through the lens that I look through, which is like, I would never put myself in that situation, Joe.
We're veering very dangerously close to spoiler territory here.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this movie is difficult to talk about, because I think the title cards at the end explained to me what was really going on, the dynamic in the relationship, which the movie was exploring. But I think, I'll just say that the Rebecca Hall character seemed to embrace this as a convenience, as opposed to her preferred way of living.
Right.
So,
true.
You know, I think, again, really difficult to have this discussion without, you know, ruining, I think, what to me was one of the major impacts of the movie.
Yeah.
And that didn't come until the end.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting is I actually did some reading about this, you know, because now we don't have cable and I don't like movies very much. I'm just kidding. but apparently there was another woman as well, supposedly, that came on the scene. I think there's a lot to this story that we don't quite know yet.
Right.
Yeah, and I also, like, for example, it took me a while. I mean, I'd actually had to think about the movie, like, a week later, and I realize now where Wonder Woman's lasso of truth comes from.
Yes.
And it plays beautifully. I mean, it's not very obvious, but it plays beautifully to that.
And the bullet bracelets.
And the bullet bracelets, yeah. and a lot of it. And I don't know how much of that is conjecture versus what is known about. You know, are these liberties that the movie has taken? I doubt it, because at least the lasso of truth part plays a big, you know, it's almost the first hour of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think, you know, it's just remarkable. I think that I just found the whole story so fascinating, and I was kind of, I was kind of enraptured through it. And you know, especially Rebecca Hall, and you know, I really think she's quite incredible here. I mean, mm-hmm. I almost saw a little bit of Emma Thompson in her. Like her sensibility, her way of talking, she seemed to be channeling Emma Thompson somehow.
Hmm.
But I don't know, it was a great experience for me. I really enjoyed it because it was all so unpredictable. I didn't know where it was going.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. At all.
Because it meandered.
Yeah. that.
Because it wasn't going anywhere. No, it just kind of like went. It just flowed and ebbed.
Everybody's
like. See, Rashmi thought it was going nowhere. Rashmi, Yasti, you didn't know where it was going, and I thought it went everywhere.
All right.
So, what do we make of that?
everywhere in a good way or not?
It just covered a lot of different things without really stopping to evaluate and make a statement about any of them.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a lot things going on.
I mean, I think, you know, Wonder Woman as a comic, which is where we start in the movie when he has to defend his drawings, you know, it got banned because it was so saucy. Mm-hmm. And if you think about how saucy the comic is in that time, this is really dry and flat and...
Really?
Yeah. And okay, there's a bit of dress up and a bit of sexy time, but it's just... I feel like it didn't commit to a direction and really embrace one part of it.
Do you think there was any studio interference here by putting Wonder Woman in the name? You get the movie a lot of attention. Especially in a year like this where Wonder Woman has been all over everything.
Yeah, and remember this is the Wonder Women.
But because part of the marketing includes the Wonder Woman correct. You know, legend, right?
Correct.
Then to have a movie that would have been a strong, hard R-rated, you know, version of this story with, you know, passion and sex and, you know, all of that. Maybe that would have been a little too much for the studio to handle.
I think maybe this might have been improved if they had concentrated on one particular part of his life.
Yeah.
I mean, this follows the standard biopic route. I mean, not necessarily like from his childhood or anything, but it starts off at a particular point of time and goes all the way through the rest of Professor Marston's life. And so it kind of, therefore, by virtue of the choice to do a standard traditional biopic, it's kind of stuck with, you know, what you consider nothing much happens.
But, yeah, that's a really good point.
But I was amazed. And I didn't know that you know, Wonder Woman started off with such questionable origins.
No, I had no clue.
Yeah, and then eventually at some point, they kind of cleaned her up and kind of, you know, then she became, you know, this very wholesome, you know, America sweetheart kind of cartoon character. But she came from less than... chased roots.
Yes. And some of the kind of the cartoon pages that were depicted in the movie, I mean, they weren't shy about that either.
No. Right?
I mean, this was very much a case of, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink in seemingly every frame. So yeah. I don't know how spicy the original comic books were, but certainly what the movie alludes to is that they would have been the kind of thing that, you know, you're not sure you want your kids reading.
Yeah. And let's face it again, maybe this is spoiler territory, but I just don't know even now of another story about a man who's most of his life lived with two women and had children with each of them, and they all lived like one big happy family.
I think it happens more than you think, Yazdi.
My grandfather.
Okay, then maybe he should make a movie about his life.
No,
well, you have to qualify that now, Joe.
My grandfather was a chief in Ghana, and as a chief, you could have more than one wife. And
But did they all live together?
They didn't live together in one house, so they had separate households, and he had, you know, essentially, you know, four homes, you know, that he would manage. But, you know, I guess it's a sort of society like that, I guess.
Most of the Middle East. Yes,
but you know what, Rashmi, I guess the difference here is that, you know, they weren't together, right?
Right.
As the, you know, there were no there wasn't one big bedroom where everyone got together.
Yeah. So this is rated R, by the way.
Yeah. This is rated R. It's not a hard R then. I mean,
no,
this
it's
is
a very
just
soft R, yeah.
It's just on the PG-13 plus.
Yeah. Because it kind of toys with just going over the edge, but doesn't have the gumption to do so.
Yeah. Feels like contractual restraints. Oh, you know, maybe that just wasn't the movie they wanted to make.
Yeah.
All right, so let's wrap it up. Rashmi, what did you think?
I think Hall's acting is good, but only because the other two were so flat. I hated Luke Evans in this movie. Suffering Sappho. I'm wearing my truth lasso and telling you all that, unfortunately, I suffered a little through this one. I will give this a 5 out of 10.
That's more generous than I thought you would. I don't know. Should I give it a 7 or an 8? I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 because I'm just
amazed. To counteract my 5.
No, not to counteract, because I think
yes, he's championing again.
Yeah, I think you don't see movies like this made. And I think as fascinating as the whole Wonder Woman universe is, once you see the life of this man who created this character, you can kind of see the origins of some of the more bizarre elements in the Wonder Woman mythology, like how she came from this island of women and so forth. There's a lot of stuff there. And I think one of the problems with the movie is some of those connections are a little too pat and too much on the nose. Like, well, you know, this is what happened in his life, therefore he had this in Wonder Woman. And I doubt if it was that straightforward. But still, regardless, I just think it makes a fascinating companion piece. And I think at a time when, you know, we're just making very safe action movies and horror films, to make a movie like this, which kind of almost doesn't fall neatly in any category, although it is a biopic, I think it takes some gumption to make it, to release it, for actors to commit to it, and we can see it. So I liked it. 8 out of 10.
Joe?
You know, I think there's an interesting story here about the history of, you know, one of the more famous comic book characters out there. I think the genesis of this character, you know, is now perhaps made a lot more interesting to me, even though I'm not familiar with the source material. You know, we have a great rendition of what, you know, what I see as Wonder Woman, you know, with this year's movie release. So, you know, in terms of my interest in it as, you know, the history of a character that I think is now up there in terms of popularity, it's good. But it's a little toothless, and I think it touches on a whole bunch of other things that it's trying to say but doesn't really, you know, deliver its punches in any of those areas. So, you know, it fell a little flat for me. That's not to say I wasn't interested in the movie and wasn't said I didn't enjoy it. It certainly kept my attention. You know, when it's out on Netflix, it will probably be one of my picks for the week. So I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
It's not bad.
Yeah, which is...
5, 6, and 8.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's okay. It was, you know... So I wished it had picked... I wish it had decided upon a soapbox and then got on it and started preaching at us, you know, hard and hard.
Yeah. I think maybe a little bit better casting would have helped as well. Luke Evans is just like...
Oh, God, he's so dull. He is. He's very dull. Really? I mean, seriously, he annoyed me. I wanted to slap him.
And then the other person, the character...
I would have left his ass.
Bella. Yeah, Luke Evans is just... I think he's a little spy. He doesn't have a spine.
Yeah, you just hit the nail on the head. I think that's what... Yeah. This is a man... Okay, now, sorry, I know the podcast's over and we've done our score. You've just hit the nail on the head. This was a character that was all about power and being a woman and being feminist, yet the man who created her, or how it was depicted, was this spineless, ridiculous, pathetic man.
It seems like he didn't have...
He was a little bit.
I think he, as an actor, he perhaps lacked... And maybe it was the way the character was written, but... Whatever it was, the portrayal of Professor Marston in this movie lacked the charisma to essentially, you know, have the magnetism that it would take in my mind for this thing to work.
Yes.
Right? I mean...
Yeah. So yes. A little bit. I don't know why they picked him, because he's...
He wasn't... Yes. He wasn't alpha enough. He needed in some way to be, you know... a stronger man. But then again, I think, again, if you think about the title cards at the end of the movie and the motives of the Rebecca Hall character to enter into this arrangement, I think maybe that provides more context that just didn't emerge in the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And maybe there was just, you know, there was a critical scene or a line of dialogue or something that would have given us that. In the end, it was like, and here's what it was really all about.
Because I can't believe that what transpired could have transpired without some degree of, you know.
I think this discussion's a little annoying for people listening, right, so right, we can spoiler it. Just
I won't.
Okay, because
I will say
because we're all like talking around something. It's like frustrating.
Yeah,
Bella Heathcote, who plays the other girl. Yeah. I wish they had a better actor. Yeah, again. She came off as being, she was playing the innocent type too much, I think.
Exactly.
Against Rebecca Hall.
Right.
So, and that's like I said, that's where it failed for me. Like, it failed for me because you had to be either the demure homekeeper, or you had to be the strong,
the Madonna, or the
manly,
right,
you know, bigger yeah. balls than your husband type woman.
As I say, they can't all be like you, Rashmi.
Thank you, Joe.
On that note.
Yes.
Let's wrap up the podcast for today. Let us know what you think of this. Facebook.com/MovieWallace.
This is the real Wonder Woman signing off.
Where we interact with people most. We do have a Twitter account. Feel free to tweet at us. We would like to see your tweets. And I nearly said something incorrect there. So, tweets, Instagrams, Facebooks, all sorts of ways to interact with us. Even regular old email at mail@moviewallahs.com. So let us know what you think of these movies. Let us know what you think of the podcast. Love to hear from you. Until our next episode, too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.